Hello and welcome to Mike M's Weekly Reads. I was at the shop today and I picked up another 1950s Blackhawk. This is issue number 55. It's about fine condition. Really nice cover, really beautiful, stands out a lot. I love these things. So this is a 10-cent Blackhawk issue. It has him fighting some Japanese soldiers in the water and hitting one of them with the butt end of a rifle while there's another Japanese soldier in the water drowning. So he's taken out too, and it looks like his plane crashed in the black background. The next one I got is a reprint, but it's a DC Special number 26 that features the enemy ace and has a Joe Kubert cover, and it's just an iconic one. It's got Enemy Ace in the background, and he's in his plane in the foreground, and it looks like he's taken out some soldiers at the there's a cannon that was firing at him, and it looks like he took out the soldiers that were there. So really cool cover. It says the battle for survival in the fiery skies of World War I. So very cool. This episode. Oh, I also want to talk about one other thing. The cover Bs for the DC, which are the same cost as the cover As, have been phenomenal. They don't sport the logo, and it's just like this iconic artistic picture. And I picked up one for Batman, one for Harlequin and Joker, and one for Deathstroke, which is that Batman crossover. Very amazing. I just finished eating, so I'm gonna be thirsty, so I'm gonna be grabbing a bunch. But it's Wednesday's like the only day I get a chance to record these things. And last week, I recorded a DC one that you could find on the DC Spotlight, Mike M's DC Spotlight, and the DC Noise feed. Go ahead and check that out. I talked a lot about DC quality comics, including a lot of Blackhawk and Plastic Man and my love for the Freedom Fighters and a bunch of other stuff. So please check that out if you're interested. And for this episode, I'm going to dedicate this to the Nick Wetmore of the Nerdy Legion. And it's just going to be, he sent out a lot of questions. So I thought I'd answer them in this episode. Nick Wetmore says, "What was your favorite DC Crisis story?" Well, my favorite DC Crisis story was Crisis on Infinite Earths. It had everybody in it, and it was freaking amazing. It had major deaths of Flash and Supergirl, and it had the Monitor and the Anti-Monitor and Pyra, who was always crying, and I just loved it. It couldn't do no wrong. And it hit me at a time when I was trying all kinds of things, but I wasn't like getting like a lot of DC. I was getting Superman, Batman, action, Justice League, a couple of things prior. And when Crisis occurred, it got me to buy everything. So it really sparked, it was like an event book that drove me to the shop, and I knew I had to. I actually cut a lot of Marvel too to make room for DC, and just join the bandwagon. And I would have to say that even though I love DC prior to that, and it's especially the Flash and things sparked my interest, it kind of got me to go as much all in as I could at the time, and it made me cut a lot of Marvel. Even though, we had Secret Wars and all kinds of stuff competing with it. But yeah, it was my favorite. And I just love how it had the Charlton characters. It had everybody. And it was a really big threat. And it crossed over into a lot of the titles. There was this banner that said Crisis on Infinite Earths, and you'd see the red skies in a lot of the titles. And I picked up a lot of the titles that I wasn't picking up because of that Crisis banner. So it got me hooked. And since that point, DC has remained a big seller for me. Like I never really cut back on DC, and I've been all in for the last decade. Like, and I've gone back and filled in a lot of holes. And my goal was to have every DC comic since 1973, and it still is. And I pretty much have that already, with a few exceptions, at least with the major superhero titles. I have to work on the war books. And I do go down rabbit holes. Like if I see a Golden Age Blackhawk or a Golden Age Batman, or I'll and it's affordable, I will go get it. I will get it. And it distracts me from that goal. And I've been trying to complete runs on Marvel too, so I get distracted. I go down so many damn rabbit holes. My friend Chris says that his glory kind of thing is, you know, what was this phrase he used? He said, sometimes less is more, or something to that effect. And it makes a lot of sense because what he's saying is, like, if I just collect Batman, he keeps his focus. And because it's less, it's more, but and that works for him, but it wouldn't work for me because I get excited about everything. So, having said that, whatever sparks my interest at the time, that's what I jump in on. But back to the questions. When you're having a tough time slowing your brain down before bed, do comics relax you or just tire your eyes out? That's a very good question, Nick. I find if it's paper, it relaxes me before bed because the screen illumination kind of drives me mad sometimes. Especially if you're in a dark room, and that's what I do read sometimes before bed because it's dark. Or in the middle of the night. And I find out that since I started this new job, my stress levels have been through the roof, man. I got these crazy deadlines. I'm not an expert like I was on the previous system. Like I knew it inside and out, so I could adapt very easily. This one I'm having a huge learning curve, and it's providing me a lot of anxiety. But it seems like since I started this new job and I'm on the computer for 10 to 12 hours a day, I'm really starting to hate the iPad. So it's not, I would say when I read on the iPad, it just tires my eyes out. They're already exhausted. The illumination is just overwhelming. And when you say if I do sit down, I do find if I can get a comic before bed, I decompress. But I've been going to bed so exhausted that I read myself to sleep. I don't get through an issue at night, and I used to be able to. I get about halfway through, I zonk out. I feel peace for about 2 hours, and I sleep really well. And then my mind starts racing about work again, and I pop back up, and then I have to try to read or do something to calm myself down. But that's a good question. Let's see. He also asks Legion of Superheroes questions. How did you get into the title? Okay. Legion of Superheroes, I have never been like a huge Legion of Superheroes guy. I discovered Legion. My first Legion was the deluxe Baxter paper format that went directly. They wouldn't go to newsstand. They would go just to comic shops. You know, they did that with the Titans, and they did it with Camelot 3000, and they did it with the Legion. That's when I started to get on. Before that, I only had like maybe 3 issues of Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes, and I really didn't gain an appreciation until recently when I started going down the rabbit hole of trying to get the first appearance of every single Legionnaire. I'm insane. But my favorite, well, maybe I'll let me see. What drew you to the title? I kind of, how did you get into the title? Basically, going to the comic shop and seeing these really cool deluxe format Baxter paper. It was like DC doing a Marvel fanfare. Because when I first discovered Marvel fanfare, I was like, what is this? It drew me in because it was a thicker paper, the glossy, and back then that was the shit, you know. And then you got these Baxter formatted DC titles. I'm like, these are badass, and you had to go to a shop to get them. So that's what drew me to the title. Let's see, what else does he say? Do do do. Oops, I must have missed it. Damn it. I cut and pasted it from where was this on? Oh, it was on Facebook. So I probably could find it, but I might be able to if I saved it. So I'm gonna go check. Because it has a C more under it, but I guess when I cut and pasted it in to my questions, it didn't grab it. So saved. It says I have one saved. And I didn't save it. Oh, maybe I did. Yes, I did. All right. So he said, what was your favorite run of Legion of Superheroes? Well, I'll have to say that the Great Darkness Saga is my favorite run, and I discovered it way late. I think I read it like 7 years ago. I had a few of the issues that I read in singles, but it didn't really capture my attention at the time because it was a big story, and just to have a few stories, you just don't really get into it. But when I read it as a whole hardcover, I enjoyed the hell out of it. So that was my favorite. I really liked the New 52 run. And I know that a lot of people, and it didn't succeed. They had two titles, Legion Lost, and they had Legion of Superheroes. Legion of Superheroes was it because it had Keith Giffen artwork and Scott Koblish on inks. And what drew me to that is it looked very Kirby-esque, and it just blew my freaking mind. So it worked for me on a really huge level. He said, "Who's my favorite top three Legionnaires?" Ultra Boy, because I just like the. I was always drawn to him because he has the ability to switch. Like, you have these powers of invulnerability, flight, super strength. It's one of those things like the Valiant Hardcore guys have, but you can only have one at a time. So it always fascinated me that you have to make these decisions on what you're going to do and when you're going to do it because you have to switch them. So Ultra Boy has always been one of my favorites. The other one is like an obscure character and she became a teacher, but it's Night Girl. I really enjoy the hell out of her, and she was very fascinating to me. Even though she became a teacher in like pre-Justice 52. They had Adventure Comics pre-52, and it was featuring the Legion of Superheroes, and I just fell in love with Nightgirl, and I had to go get a lot of her backstories, even though she's pretty obscure. She's not one of the major ones. And so you'll see I'm drawn to like a lot of the obscure. And then I would have to say I'd have to go with man, it's tight on the third one, but I'm gonna go with Triplicate Girl and Dual Damsel, because I've always liked the ability that they could have like, and they had these weird relationships, like you'd have like this romantic thing going on where you didn't know exactly which one was which, and they would mess with people. And I dug this hell out of it because Legion of Superheroes is a big soap opera. I mean, that once you start getting into it, there's such a huge lineup, and it's really fascinating on all the different relationships and characters they could have. And then a lot of people are fighting for leadership, and there's a lot of strange leaders on that particular team. Like the big three never really appeared to me, like Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, and Saturn Girl. Those were the founding fathers of. Now I like them, but they never, when I was younger, they never appealed to me. It was always like, matter of fact, going back to the first question, I think one of the first comic books that I had Censor Girl on the cover. And she had that full face mask, and it drew me to that comic book. So it just looked really iconic. You don't see too many superheroes like that with a full face mask, like her mouth is even covered. You know, you have Batgirl, had that one had. One of the Batgirls had a mask that had stitches right over her face, so you could never see her face. So those are my top three Legionnaires. I have a lot more, but those are my top three. So Triplicate Girl, Night Girl, and Ultra Boy. Shadow Lass is up there too, but I have to go with my faves. Nick also says, your talk about Aunt May truly affected me, and thanks. Hope you know people are listening and responding. Keep up the great work. So, yeah, it affected me. I was crying. I don't know if you could tell that episode. I didn't listen to it, but I was tearing up. And that's like, when a comic book like that affects you, when you talk about it, you know that's deep. Like, that was the third time I talked about it, I cried. So I cried when I read it the first time. I cried when I was telling Barb about it, and then I cried when I recorded about it. So yeah, it was a big issue. The next question is, which Batman, Flash, and Spider-Man villain needs to be redone or made over? Poof. I would like to see, and they've kind of made him over in the TV show for Flash. Flash is the easiest because I know it so much of it, and well, I know a lot of all this stuff, but I think for Flash it would be Big Sur. Big Sur came around the end of Flash, right before Crisis, and there was this huge arc called Trial of the Flash, and Carmen Infantino was the artist, and Kerry Bates was the writer, and I fell in love with that character, Big Sur. They introduced him on the TV as a prisoner that was helping Barry. And Barry freed him from prison because we don't know for sure, but he really acted like he was innocent and framed for not doing him. And Barry actually believed him, and he got him out of prison. And the prison was really corrupt in that season. Actually, it's the current season. But that one is for Flash. For Spider-Man, who needs to be made over or redone? Because I like usually the first incarnation of these characters is the best, and then if the writer just writes and evolves the character, that's what I like the most. So for Spider-Man, man, that'd be tough. Who would need to be made over? I don't know. I can't think of anybody offhand that would need to be made over. I'd prefer them not to be made over. I'd prefer characters to stay similar and then just grow and not be redone. Even like, I mean, Tom King's getting praised for Kite Man now because he was obscure and now he's got a lot of depth. But he didn't change Kite Man. And I don't think that's really a redo. I think it's a taking a character that's obscure and making him just building him, turning him into something that you want them to be. And it's easier to do that with an obscure character, but if you study each character, you can grow a character based on their what was that? There was a title with the spider villains in it, the really obscure ones that Nick Spencer was writing, the Deadly Foes of Spider-Man or something to that effect. And he did it really well. He took some of the obscure characters and just built on them, and it had humor to it and it had seriousness to it. I don't know. For Spider-Man, Batman, who could be redone? Eraserhead. That character just had an eraser head and the ability to erase crimes. And I have his first appearance. They haven't done much with him, but his thing is he would be able to commit crimes and erase evidence. So that was pretty interesting. So back to the questions. Spider-Man, I can't think. Who would need a makeover? Like I didn't. I'll tell you one of the Spider-Man supporting cast makeovers that I didn't like. I didn't like when they made Black Cat like a mobster leader. I didn't like that. I'd rather have her as a solo character, and this weird in love interest to Spider-Man or Peter. No, not she hates Peter. She only likes Spider-Man. That's the thing. I was like, we're gonna have sex, put your mask on. I don't want to see Peter. I want to see Spider-Man. Really weird. But man, I'll have to think about the Spider-Man. I would like to see one supporting cast come back. I found him fascinating as Cardiac. He was that doctor, and he was a vigilante that was an actual MD that worked in a hospital. And I think he was created by Eric Larson. He was around that time frame. I would like to see him not redone, but for them to build upon his character and show growth. And I don't even know if he's still alive. I didn't check, but that's the character I would like to see. Okay, your thoughts on the Steven Spielberg Black Hawks film? Well, I've been buying a lot of Black Hawk, and I've been reading a lot, and I am really excited. I hope that it takes place in World War II. I hope there's a Black Hawk Island. I hope they have at least six to seven key members of the Black Hawk, and you'd have to throw in Lady Black Hawk too. I hope it's like Memphis Belle and those type of movies. And they would look at the Golden Age and take elements out of the Golden Age and put them in. And I'd like to see the War Will, because you talk about like what got me into Black Hawk. And I think when comics were around 60 cents, right around the time of Camelot 3000, I started buying Black Hawk. And what drew me to that cover was this giant Nazi War Will just rolling over everything of the Allies. And Black Hawk was in the front ground, and he's like, "What the fuck am I gonna do?" You know, the War Will was gonna rampage over him. He didn't know what to do. But I want to thank you for the questions, Nick. This was fun to answer and to talk about the Legionnaires and the Crisis on Infinite Earths. You had the Harbinger character and Pyra, and oh man, there's just so much good there. And I remember seeing Blue Beetle, and I was like, what the hell are the Charlton characters doing here? Because I had a few of the Charlton characters from Charlton, the Action 12 cent issues. I had a Black Hawk, I mean a Black Blue Beetle. I had a Blue Beetle that had the question in the backup, and I had a strange what was the title? Strange Adventures? No, I think it might be Strange Adventures or Space Adventures featuring Captain Atom. And I saw them in Crisis on Infinite Earths, and I was like, holy flapjacks! I had read these guys a long time ago, and now they're in DC Comics, and I was real puzzled. I'm like, why are they there? And I was so excited when Crisis came up over and they launched Peter Cannon Thunderbolt. They launched a Blue Beetle title with Paris Cullen artwork and Len Wein writing. They launched a Kerry Bates Captain Atom. They launched a Question by Dennis O'Neil in like that deluxe format. They put Nightshade in the Suicide Squad. That was awesome. So it's like you had all these Charlton characters really take off. And I think Sarge Steele even showed up in Checkmate. So after Crisis, like everybody had a chance to shine. Peacemaker had a four-issue mini that was amazing. So yeah, it was a good time. And then they relaunched everything with Number One. And I like how they kept Action keep going. Like, I think that was such a bad move in New 52 to just, they should have just kept the numbering. Just because DC is not like Marvel. They don't reboot it all the time. And what the two legacy books that they always kept running and they didn't relaunch were Detective Comics and Action Comics. And now they're back in legacy numbering. But I wish they never broke it. I wish they never did. Well, I have one other interesting story at the comic shop to tell. DC Nation number zero came out, and what it is it's a 25-cent book. And what happened is this, the one of the younger guys that works at the comic store was telling me about another comic store, Kapow Comics, which is on the north end, the northwest side of Colorado Springs, and it's a coffee shop and a comic shop, and I think they make smoothies and other things. And I've never been there. I've never stepped into it. There's like eight comic shops in Colorado Springs. I don't know what the hell's going on. I really don't, because the market's not is not demanding it. At least I don't see it. But what was interesting is they had the one in 50s, the one in 100s, the one in 50s, 500s. I don't know if it went to 1,000, but DC Nation had these incentives, so people bought a lot. Well, this guy bought like 1,000 of DC Nation at this other shop, and he had all the variants, but he forgot to tell his employee in the morning that the variants were not going for cover price because because they're variants, they're retailer incentives. If you buy this 100 copies, you get one of these. If you buy 500 copies, you get one of these, and they all have different covers. So the employee that opened up in the morning got those comics and started selling them for 25 cents a shot, and he sold all of them. So some lucky bastard got those variants for really, 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 really cheap. And oh well, I guess that happens when you have employees and you don't tell them ahead of time, or they don't have common sense. They don't know what a 1 in 500 is or what it means. I would have at least say, hey, why do I only have two copies of this and one copy of this and four copies of this and six copies of that? And called the boss and says, you know, what's up with these? Well, he didn't, and they sold for a quarter. So thank you, Nick Wetmore of the Nerdy Legion. Please check out the Nerdy Legion podcast, and you'll like it, especially if you're a fan of Geek Brunch. It's a little off the cuff. I like it because it's rant. It's not like a planned show. I think they have like planned high topics like we do in Geek Brunch, and then it just goes off the rails, and it's a natural conversation, and you don't know where it's gonna go. Well, that's what I like. That's why I like these questions. I could go off on a tangent and just keep talking because I like randomness of it. So I think that's it for this episode. You can re well actually you'll hear me break down the comics still. So I want to thank you for listening, and I'll be right back with the weekly reads. Hello and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. This actually why am I welcoming you? This is the second part of the episode where I go to break down the books I read. And before I do that, I had a question from Rosh Mushad, and he asked how I felt about every era of Black Hawk, or what was my era of Black Hawk. And he guessed it. He said, was Chaykin your era? It wasn't the first one that I read. It was Black Hawk from the 80s, like pre-Crisis. That was the first time I was exposed to the Warwill and everything. But where I really liked it was the Mature Readers Black Hawk series by Howard Chaykin. So you guessed it. And I have every era. I think all the Howard Chaykin ones I own. Let's check. Let's just check. That's a good question. Maybe we'll have to fill some of this in. So that would be the. Let's start with the latest series, Series 3. That was from 1989 to 1990. And that wasn't Chaykin, that was Martin Pascoe and Rick Burchett. And it had 16 issues and one annual and one special edition. And there was some Doug Monch in there too. Mike Volsberg art. I own all those. So let's see what else there is. There was the second series. This is the one that he's talking about, is the Howard Chaykin from 1988, which was the prestige format, Blood and Iron, with him doing the writing and art. And I thought he had another series, so I'm a little confused. And then the first series, which I need to work. Well, I'm working on the Golden Age part of it. I'm starting to pick up some. And when I get towards the bottom, I got a ways to go because they essentially came back in the DCs and the 12 cent editions. And I have some sporadic issues, not that much. And then we got in that weird area where they had the red suits and they actually had powers. That was very strange. They like gave them abilities. That was around the 60s. And that was a strange era. They were superheroes. They turned them into superheroes. But the era that I know when they came back was from issue 244, and that's when they weren't heroes anymore. This was in 1976. So the series ran to 243 in 1968, and in 1976 it took off again. And that one I own most of. I mean, there's some sporadic, like I'm missing 249. The War Will was my introduction, and then I filled a lot of it, which was a matter of fact, I own two issues because the cover's so damn awesome. It's a 60 center, and that one was from 1982. So you could see the sporadic because it jumped from 1977 to 1982, and that's when I started to come back. And I'm missing a few of those, but I need to fill it. But I could have sworn there's another Blackhawk. Maybe it's called Blackhawks. No, that was the DC New 52, and I own all that. And that was only 8 issues. Ah, man, I could have sworn that Howard Chaykin had a longer running series, but I could be wrong. Maybe it's just that 3 issue format. Very interesting question, and I do want to fill up from the 60s forward. And then whenever I get a shot, like this past week, I bought another Blackhawk. What did I do with it? I should cover it real quick if I can find it. Oh, there it is. I bought another Blackhawk, and it is this one's a really beautiful cover. I would say this one's in very fine too. Other than it not being like a pure white on the cover, there's a little tanning. The shape of it is amazing and the interiors are beautiful. This is number 62. It's a 10 cent edition from Quality Comics before DC took over again. And it's called General X, who is the master of the military maneuvers. Can Blackhawk break through to learn his identity? And he's like punching some dude on the cover in his blue outfit. Looks like somebody in the background is stumbling too with a rifle. But then they have the floating heads of all the members. So I did pick up another Blackhawk. And I think there's two more at the shop. And I'll probably pick up those last two. And then lay back a little bit until Heroes Con. But I will probably pick up those 2 issues. Maybe the next run and those are the last two he has on the wall. So let's break down the books. This is for June 26th through July 02 of 2017. 5, I love it. 4, I really like it. 3, I like it. 2, I did not like it. 1, I hated it. We'll start at the bottom. We'll give you the totals. Had a total of only 26 books that week, 1 Zenoscope, well distributed week, 13 Marvel, 3 Keith Cunningham comics from the con, 2 DC, 1 Amigo, 2 American Mythology, 1 Alternative Press, 2 Action Lab, and 451 Media. So if you look at what happened here, it sure looks like I went to box A of the independents and I picked a bunch of them because the numeric 451 Media I label first. So numerics are first and then it goes alpha. So it looks like I went into one of those early boxes and just picked out a bunch of number ones and such. So we'll start with the 3 out of 5 from American Mythology. This is Hatchet, and what this was. is a movie that was kind of like a homage to slasher movies back in the 80s. You know, Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees, Friday the 13th, all that kind of cabin stuff. And they made this new character, Hatchet. And what this was a prequel to go along with the film and the backstory. And it was all right, you know. I don't think I continued with this book past issue one, though. I thought it was all right. I enjoyed it. It didn't blow my socks off, but it was entertained. From Action Lab, we have Medicine. This is the bottom of the four out of fives, which means I really liked it. We have a certain doctors are being blackmailed to provide treatment for criminals. One of the doctors is related to the Thinker, a villain from the past. Interesting concept. Doctors being blackmailed to provide treatment for supervillains. Pretty cool stuff. And then I went on a looks like I went on an Iron Man tirade for this week for some reason. We have Invincible Iron Man 518 through 521. There's so many volumes of this. It's so confusing. This is Tony Loses Resilient. That was this company where they were taking his heart thing and they adapted it for power to power up a car. Rhodey is in the armor, Potts as rescue. The Mandarin takes down Stain, even though they were working together. So that's, you know, Stain and Mandarin, two villains that are bad for Iron Man. Stain is more of a business villain. Mandarin captures Tony and has him making a device for him. I guess very much like the how Iron Man started. We then get to Strange Places number 1 through 3. I bought these from my friend Keith Cunningham. It's an anthology of sci-fi horror, and most of the artists I had met. So, Keith did some of the art on some of the anthology, but there were also some. I think there was a Dean Stahl in there, and there was a couple other guys that I know that's in my, you know, circle of friends. I enjoyed it. We have Stain number 1. This is from 451 Media. This is colorist David Baron starting to do his writing as a futuristic bounty hunter is hired by police to take down people they are too afraid of. It was an interesting art was fantastic, really good story. Then we get into a Jim Shooter story and an anthology type story. It's a bedtime stories for impressionable children. I think Jim Shooter just wrote the first one. It was from American Mythology Press. The host is laid off, construction worker that inherits a child care home where he tells kids horrible stories. Jim Shooter's first story, abused kid that goes to a shop where he gives the kid an axe that Lizzie Borden, who's a serial killer, used on her parents. He gives to sister and he murders his parents. Next is a kid who is dating the mobster's daughter, is taken to a Nevada bomb testing site to be killed, and he gets away, and his captors are killed instead. He talks about what Vegas should be to others, and they get the idea. It's basically he tells other people what Vegas should be. They get the idea, it's still his idea, become rich off of it, and he dies homeless. It was an interesting story. And then there was another story. A girl hates her mom, so she murders her to find out if she is Cthulhu, and then the creature and. If she is Cthulhu creature and kills them, I guess the mom kills them both. So that was an interesting anthology. And the when I talk to you, the host is like a Tales from the Crypt guy, except he's a laid off construction worker that inherited a child care home. And I think there was supposed to be a second issue, but it never came out. I was definitely on board. We have Courier number 1. This is Zenoscope, and this is a sci-fi Zenoscope story that kind of is outside of their Grim Fairy Tales universe, as far as I can tell. And from the Ashes, it's titled. Courier is hired to take things from hub to hub, and is hired this time for taking medical supplies through a no man's land, and they're all after those medical supplies. We have Regression number 1. That's weird. Barb hasn't texted me yet. She's still at work. She's working later than me. Regression number 1. This is an image book. Oh, I missed it. So we had 27 books. And I need to add this into the statistics image number one. There we go. So we made 27 books instead of 26. Updated the stats. I needed to back up this file again. As a man starts seeing bug infestations in bodies of everyone around him, his friend takes him to a hypnotist who tries to help. Maybe a past life of a serial killer is him. Cullen Bunn's father was a hypnotist. So the back matter of this story was very fascinating. This almost made a 5 out of 5 just because of the back matter. It was really enjoyable. And then there was another volume of Invincible Iron Man number 1 and 2. I read Tony finds out Madame Mask is stealing from Doctor Doom and heads to Latveria and finds himself working for Doom. I'm going to look this one up again to see what volume this is because I am so damn curious. It's really hard to remember a year ago what volume because one of the things they do is come up with so many damn volumes of Marvel Comics now. Okay, I don't think that was the Matt Fraction run. So let's see what volume 2 is. Yeah, I think it might be volume 2 of Invincible Iron Man, because the series 1 is really Iron Man. It's not, even though they had Invincible Iron Man in it wasn't officially named Iron Man. So this was he did use him a lot in other stories. But it could be this 216 third series, which was in 2016, which was also M Brian Michael B Bendis. So, yeah. Is there a fourth volume? No, there was three, just of that proper title. So this is probably the third volume, is my guess. And then we have. So I did mention he's stealing from Doctor Doom and heads to Latveria, finds himself working for Doctor Doom. That's interesting because Brian Michael Bendis played on that, and actually Doctor Doom became I want to say irredeemable Iron Man, but I can't remember what it is. It's one of those stories. It's not irredeemable. Irredeemable's the Ant-Man. We have Tales of the Suicide Forest. This was an anthology from Amigo Comics. El Torres takes on the Suicide Forest. And this is Volume 1, by the way. There's another volume going on right now. With the rape hunting them, and another of a man who hates his co-workers because they don't respect him, so he does voodoo dolls, but is trapped there and hangs himself. So he finds out that his co-workers didn't hate him, and they were waiting for him at a promotion party. And then the girl that he thought desperately wanted to ask him out. So it was a really creepy story. And the first one was really depressing because it was three girls, and one of them set up like a rape of her, and it was really dark. But I gave it a 5 out of 5 for horror. We then get into a Sean Pryor Kickstarter comic, but I'm labeling it as Action Lab because it was solicited later as Action Lab. It's Force Number One, and this is like an NFL football comic. It was really well done, and this Super Bowl team has a veteran playing quarterback for them. He's on his way out, and he shows glimpses of the game and flashbacks of earlier. So he's down on his career, and there's a new quarterback that may take his position, but he's heading to a Super Bowl, and he wants to be there and lead the team. We have Slasher number 2 from Alternative Press. This is the magic guy behind The World Fucking Hates Me or whatever it is, Charles Forssman. I've read all his stuff, believe it or not, now. Except for that. I've watched the Netflix show, but I still need to w read this comic book. This is a girl kills another man who is abusing his wife and son in a parking lot. She just randomly killed him because she witnessed this. She buys a new knife and goes after her boss. The mother is trying to get money from the church for her non-sick son. So this is the woman that this is the boyfriend of the girl killer that just talks to her on the internet. And his story is his mother is one of those that treats their kid as if they're sick, but the doctors say No, nothing's wrong with him. And she forces him to be sick. So it's one of those weird cases. Brilliant comic book. So much to talk about there. Me and Bill loved it. We have DK3 Master Race number 9. I love this volume. This is the Kryptonians were defeated, a lot of them destroyed by turning on themselves because of bats. The leader goes nuclear and Laura throws him into the sun. Clark and his daughter are bonding at the end. Batman's younger and appreciating how much Robin has learned. So Batman almost died here, and I think they threw him in the Lazarus pit. That's what happened in a previous issue. We have International Iron Man 1 through 7. This is Bendis, I believe, too. And you have Tony and his old girlfriend. She is with another weapons manufacturer, her father. She tells him that Stark are tells Stark that he doesn't know about his real parents. They weren't his real parents, so he goes on a search to find his real mom and dad. Worked for SHIELD. She was a musician. The father went with Hydra as they betrayed SHIELD, gave up a baby for adoption, and Stark adopted Tony for his wife. So he really wasn't a Stark, is what this was saying, and I don't remember how it turned out, but we will find out as I read through these eventually. We have Dark Days, The Forge, number 1. This is the second reading. Batman uncovered the secret of the Nth metal. Joker's in the cave, and GL is assigned to go there by the Guardians in some Hawkman backstory. I really love this thing. That's why I read it twice. So that wraps up this episode. I want to thank you for listening. And please get in touch with me and give me more questions like these great listeners do. I think this is the episode where I have all of Nick Whitmore's questions. And I want you guys encourage you guys just to send them as you think of them. You don't have to wait until I ask for them. You could just send them on and I'll eventually get to them. You can reach me at or send me questions or comments about anything, the industry, the comics, back issues, comic book TV. I don't know what you send me. Just send me stuff at Mike Myers Brunch. At Mike Myers, MYERS, Brunch at Twitter. And then my email is mike@comicbooknoise.com. And you can send me questions there, more detailed stuff. You got more room. And you can also reach me on Facebook at Geek Brunch Podcast, and click the like button and leave me information on that Facebook page. The website is geekbrunchpodcast.com that hosts Mike M's Weekly Reads, Mike M's Collector's Corner, Geek Brunch, Geek Brunch Retrocast. So there's four podcasts on there. And on DC Noise Podcast is dcnoisepodcast.com. And you can find Mike M's DC Spotlight there. There are three episodes there of that. And I'm trying to do one a month. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. And we will see you soon. Take it easy. This is Friday. I'm going to try to release this today. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend and get to relax. I know I am. Because I don't have to work this weekend like last weekend, and I'm exhausted. I'm getting too old for these like 60-hour weeks. I just can't do it anymore. All right, well, I'll talk to you later. Bye.